though it may not look like it or sound like it, there's actually a thread that goes from the first reading through the responsorial psalm and lands in the gospel passage. And that thread has to do with one of our favorite words, authority. God has given authority to Moses to speak on his behalf and to act on his behalf, to do the work that was necessary to bring deliverance from the people of God, Israel, out of their bondage in Egypt and send them on their way to the promised land. At this point, Moses is literally giving his farewell address. He's 120 years old and about to go off to Mount Nebo, where he's going to die and be buried in some place that's still unknown to this day, has already commissioned his successor, Joshua, on God's authority to send him to complete the mission. They're at the Jordan River, ready to cross over. And now he's kind of giving them a little bit of a warning and a prophecy at the same time. There will be one coming from their midst, from their own people, who will be like a new Moses, who will be charged with that same authority to speak on God's behalf, to act on God's behalf, but then an ultimate fulfillment, which comes with somebody who lands in the gospel. Who might that be? Hint. Jesus. That's where the authority comes from. It's given by God to someone to act on his behalf and to speak on his behalf. There are multiple minor successors. As you go down, you get Joshua, you get Daniel, you get Ezekiel, Elijah, Elisha, Isaiah, Jeremiah, all the way down to Malachi. But again, there's that ultimate one who fulfills it with the incarnation of Jesus, the only begotten Son of God. That authority to speak and act on God's behalf. And in Jesus' case, he actually is, hint, God, who's now not acting on God's behalf. He's acting on his own authority and power. There's a question of how do we receive it? How many of us like somebody else having authority over us? I'm getting lots of blank stares, like, not me. We don't like the thought that somebody can actually have the authority to suggest, you can do this, you cannot do that. That goes all the way back to who? Actually, it goes back even further. Who was the first one to reject God's authority? Satan and all the angels who went into rebellion with him. We have to deal with them today, too. But there's this constant thing that's going on all the way back from Adam to Eve. Moses keeps having to deal with it and leading the people out of bondage. There are people who just really do not deal with having somebody exercise authority very well because they keep doing what? They keep rebelling against it. The responsorial psalm is giving us two instances of that rebellion in action. It mentions two place names, Massah and Meribah, both dealing with two different things. Now remember, the people of Israel, from the slaying of the firstborn of the Egyptians, not just their sons, but also the male of all of their animals, they've seen all of those 10 plagues, including that one. They have seen the parting of the Red Sea. They have seen God deal decisively with Pharaoh's entire army, all his chariots and charioteers, by drowning them in the sea, the Red Sea, after God allowed the waters to flow back in together. They've seen all of this stuff. They have been now fed for a while from the manna that falls mysteriously onto the ground 6 days a week. It continues until the day they cross over the Jordan River. They've seen all of these things over and over and over again, all this different stuff. And they hit another little snag. They're out in the desert. What's lacking in a desert? Water. So having seen all of this stuff that God has done, worked through Moses, what would you think their response would have been to noticing that they had a need for some water? God, you've done all of these things to provide for us. Would you help us out? We need some water. But is that what they do? No. What do they do? Mumble, grumble, groan, and complain. In other words, rebel. You know, their words to Moses are, what did you lead us out into the desert for? To die of thirst? What's wrong with you? And so God directs Moses, okay, let's show them we can handle this one too. He goes to a rock, taps it with his staff, and what happens? Here comes water gushing forth out of a rock in sufficient quantity to give water to everybody in the entire Israelite community, which is several hundred thousand people and all of their livestock. And you say, okay, now they surely got it by now, right? This was Massa, a test, a place of testing is what Massa means. God was testing them. Did they pass? They encountered the same problem again later on. They are now at a place called Meribah, which is called a place of contention. They have no water again. Did they learn from the first time? They actually wind up getting punished for this one rather severely. But they don't get it because they keep rebelling. They keep going into a state of contention against God, against Moses, and everything. They just don't learn. Now, that's just exclusively dealing with the Israelite people, right? That was not a rhetorical question. Who else keeps going into states of contention against the authority and the will of God? Raise your hand. I'm serious. Raise your hand. You've been doing since you got old enough to start telling mommy and daddy, no. How often is that the first word a child learns? I don't know of a single child that doesn't say no to their parents. And we never grow out of it, do we? There's that sense of authority. God is dealing with the people of Israel all the way from Adam and Eve, all the way through Moses, all the way through Joshua, all the way into the promised land, all the way through until the birth of Jesus, the incarnate Son of God, who is now acting on real authority. We see him in his, basically, his, this is his first preaching engagement and the synagogue in Capernaum. And the people sit up and take notice because his teaching, it's coming forth with a sense of authority and power behind it. And they don't understand it, but they do recognize it. And then there's a demonstration of it. There's a gentleman in that congregation who is possessed by a demon. Do we still believe that demons exist? It's been kind of a weak teaching since back into the mid-70s or so. Now, even some of the seminary professors I had in the seminary from 1982 to 1989 said, oh, it's just stuff that they made up trying to explain evil in the world. There aren't really any evil beings floating around. Is that what the church officially says? I'm going to challenge you, fact check me if you doubt. Go to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, starting at paragraph 391. I looked it up for you. Check it. It's for real. There is this entire angelic realm, some of which rebelled against God, Satan and all the fallen angels, and they are at work. Remember, we've got Adam and Eve who are challenged by Satan. Did God really say? And he and the demons have been doing that ever since. But Jesus shows that God, and he has authority over the demons. It pipes up out of the congregation going, hey, I know who you are. You're the Holy One of God. And how does Jesus handle it? Does he go, oh, I don't believe you exist? Or no, what does he do? He responds to it with two things. First, he tells it to shut up. And second, he tells it to get out. And it has absolutely zero opportunity to rebel. It has to obey, and it shuts up, and it gets out. Every time throughout the gospel, whether you're reading Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, when he encounters a demon at work, he does those same two things. Shut up and get out. He has that authority. Now, obviously the church has authority to do the same thing. There's a deliverance ministry called exorcism, and there are exorcists in every diocese around the world. In some places, they are busier than others, especially where there's a lot of heavy drug use, prostitution, things against nature going on. Demons are at work, and a lot of them are starting to realize we've got something wrong, we need help. But that's not all. We don't really realize, because the teaching has been so weak in this area for a long time, we don't always quite realize what all is going on around us and within us. The demonic are able to plant thoughts into your head. And they are able to manipulate our emotions. Two primary paths where they try to get into our lives and, to put it bluntly, mess us up. They can mess up our thinking, and they can mislead us by our feelings. This is what you've heard me say before, and here's the reason why. The worst thing we can do is make decisions on what to do, what to say, where to go, how to behave based on how we feel. Because God's not the only one who's able to access that transmission channel within us. And he uses it frequently. How many times have you gotten up in the morning in a relatively peaceful state of mind, and all of a sudden, unbidden, here comes some memory of something somebody did to you last night, yesterday, last week, last month, last century, and before you know it, you're just all wound up and stirred up. You're going, Who do you think did that? Remember, he can plant thoughts into your heads. He can bring memories up, the stuff that happened ages ago, and just wind you up and tear you up and distract you. Why does Satan want to distract us? The more you can drag our attention off of God and get us wound up over something else, the less time that we are spending letting God build us up in our faith through the scriptures, through the sacraments, and through seeking to live out a life in Christ. The more he can wind us up, the less that we live our faith. It's why it is so important that we know that there are things that we need to very deliberately avoid. Remember, he can trigger stuff in our heads and in our bodies. What we watch, what we read, what we listen to. Do you think all the perversion that's coming out over through the entertainment industry is just there by accident? Do you have any idea how broadly spread out is the negative impact of pornography on the lives of so many, not just adults, but teenagers and children? The perversions that are being spread by some parts of the school systems? I have a deep and growing loathing of the National Education Association and the teachers' unions because they are very deeply infected by all kinds of stuff. And they're planting it, Satan-inspired, into the lives of our children. The entertainment and music industry, there is so much perversion in it. It plants images in here that when you least expect it, you're trying to do something else, and all of a sudden this pornographic image comes wandering into the view screen of your mind. Who do you think is doing that? That's not God at work. Now, some of you are looking at me rather skeptically. Prove me wrong. This is how Satan and the fallen angels work. Corrupting our minds, our memories, our thoughts, as to corrupt our words and our actions. What we don't realize because of it, and what we have not taught effectively for a long time, is that we have authority to act on it. what Jesus does with the demoniac in this gospel passage and other gospels where you see him exercising the demonic is the same process that we can do. What did Jesus do in this gospel passage with the demon in the gentleman? Remember, two things. First, he told him to shut up, and two, get out. You can do that. They cannot force us to do anything, to say anything, to think anything. They can try to plant thoughts in there. We do not have to accept them. Repeat that. We do not have to accept them. Because this is why having a knowledge of Scripture is important. Knowing how to respond. And then you have been given the grace, the power to do what Jesus does. Especially through the reception of the Eucharist. That's the power to tell Satan to shut up and get out. You need a good, healthy awareness of what's going on in your head. Of what thoughts are coming in. Of what desires are at work. And know where they're coming from so that you can do those two things promptly when they start to try to lead you off in the wrong direction. You can tell Satan and all of his fallen angels to shut up and get out. And you need to do it sometimes multiple times in the same day. Satan is relentless. They have a mission. They want to drag as many souls out of God's hands as they possibly can. They want to drag you down into hell with them. They have a hatred of the human race that we cannot even comprehend its depths. We're talking about the existence of the purest evil. It is so much infiltrated into so much of our culture around us. And we're just walking around having no clue. The addiction level to pornography is incredible in this day and age. The corruption, the perversion of human sexuality, it has never been seen in human history like it is today. Because in denying Satan and the demons existence, we are giving them free rein to roam and run and corrupt like never before in human history. But we need to know what Jesus did here, because through his word and through his presence, the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ in the Eucharist, you can do what Jesus did. And just to have it one more time, see if I can plant it in here for you. If I could come around and pop each one of you on the head, I would. You can tell Satan and all of the fallen angels, shut up and get out. For your own well-being, do it frequently.